So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. Happy Monday. It's Monday, and that means it is our happy hour here on Trending. And I've asked this question on my Instagram story. You can go and answer it now. I'll be taking your questions later on in the show. What's getting in the way of your happiness? If you don't know, it's something that you probably should know. Sure, you might even say, okay, it's an excuse, I admit it. Sure, whatever you want to say, but what's getting in the way of you being happy? Today, tomorrow, yesterday, when you're lying awake at night, frustrated, when you find yourself coming up on the holidays and you're resentful and angry, when you find yourself bored, alone at times, what is getting in the way of your happiness? I'm taking your questions on this topic, so send them my way. You can head over to my Instagram story at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And a little later on in the show, I promise, it's actually happening today. We had breaking news on Friday that just didn't allow us to get to the opposite news, really, and that is that we're still having a baby, and you want to know whether we're having a baby boy or a baby girl, and we will tell you, or I will tell you, I guess the baby's with me. I almost just gave it away, by the way. I will tell you in just a little bit, so stay tuned for later on in the show. I will be sharing live whether we're having a boy or a girl. And if you still want to guess, you can head over and guess. You have a nice bump photo. People want to know, okay, how high, how low are you sitting? Give me the details. I will tell you, I don't know, some people say it depends on how large your lips look, whether you look pretty still or not. I don't know. There's all these superstitions and things. It's hilarious to hear how people have interpreted whether or not they think I'm having a girl or boy. So have at it. Make your guess if you haven't already. I'll tell you in just a little bit. So here on our happy hour, there's a story that came across last week. And I have to tell you, I'm really excited because this relates directly to being Catholic. The longest lasting marriage, actually, that's not put together quite correctly. Because I was looking at some of, they try to add numbers together. I backtrack here. The oldest married couple just made it into the Guinness World Records, and it's incredible. They've been married 80 years, and sure, other people have been married that long, but this couple's been married 80 years. The husband is 110 years old, and the wife is 104 years old. Julio and Waldromina have been married for 80 years. They were married in 1941 in the Church of Bethlehem. It's pretty incredible to hear about this couple who, in fact, did not have the approval of other people when, or should I say the most important people, when they got married. This young couple from Ecuador didn't have the support of their parents, in fact. Their own parents on both sides didn't support the marriage, and so they were actually married in secret. Married in secret with the presence of their godparents and some close friends. And here's the cool thing. They're Catholic. They raised their family Catholic. And when asked about what the driving force behind this lasting marriage is, do you want to know what their number one claim was? I think it's fascinating. Think about it for a second. If you were married for 100, or if you were 110 years old and 104 years old, you'd been married for 80 years, and your parents didn't approve of your marriage, you're married in the Catholic Church, you have all these grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and someone asks you all these years later, what's the driving force behind your lasting marriage? What would it be? Well, their answer was that it was their friendship. And the fact that their friendship started before they ever even began dating. I have to tell you, I think that this is gold. A couple in the Guinness Book of World Records one of the longest lasting marriages, 110 years old, 104 years old, still kicking in the face of all the insanity of this world right now. And by the way, we're going to get to what they have to say about the coronavirus as well. Good perspective from some sage elders here. But coming back to this friendship thing, it's the driving force behind their lasting marriage. They said they became friends and then started dating. My argument is that chastity's at the heart of that. You see, we can't have a chaste relationship before marriage anymore, because we don't. We start dating before we even know a person. We start sleeping with them before we even know them. I remember that Carrie Underwood song, I Don't Even Know My Last Name. She goes on about how we should pull up the audio for that. I should have thought of it. But Carrie Underwood singing, she had won American Idol a number of years ago in the first handful of seasons. She's singing on and on about how she doesn't even know her last name. Her mom would be so ashamed. She woke up and next thing you know, I think it was kind of one of those Vegas marriage situations. It didn't happen for real. At least not to my knowledge. But this is the song. And I think that that song summarizes the song of our culture with regard to dating and marriage. I don't even know my last name. I don't even know anything about this person. I've fallen into bed with them. And as I know some social scientists have commented, one of which being Mark Naris, that it's like we're two pieces of raw pieces of meat anymore rubbing up against each other. Sorry, that's blunt, but that's what dating and marriage is in so many ways. And yes, I say even marriage because guess what? You're no longer interested. Someone else has picked your interest. Megan Fox, anyone else? We can name a few. And there you are. You're just another piece of meat that's walked along. You didn't have a friendship with that person. You didn't get to know them. You see, this is why friendship and chastity is so important before marriage. This is why this couple has a happy marriage 80 years later. This is probably part of the reason why they're 110 years old and 104 years old. Because they found happiness within their marriage. And let me tell you this, they said they were friends before they ever started dating. And we could say, oh yeah, but it was different back then. They got married in the 40s. Sure, you could say it was different back then, but I think that they knew what the real no-strings-attached type of dating was. You see, people talk all the time about casual sex, casual dating, no strings attached. That's not true. We are emotionally and physically wrapped up in people today. Yet they lived in a time where that wasn't quite the case as much so, although the tides were turning already back in the 40s. But that friendship allows you to have the real no strings attached dating. You can get to know someone, test the friendship out, see how they interact with other people, see how they treat their parents. We could go on and on. But here's some of what they talked about. They talked about things they love to do, and they love going to the movies and to the theater and big family gatherings. But they emphasize the importance of, quote, family unity under the rules of love, mutual respect, and an adequate education based on family values. They said these are the keys to living together healthily. Let's break that down real quick. A rule of love. Well, a rule of love doesn't just have to do with feelings, because love isn't just some emotion, which is what I think modern-day society defines it as. Love, really, we should think of as an action word. It's who we are and how we react in response to another person, which calls upon mutual respect, which is part of what they list here. Then they list an adequate education. But they're not saying, hey, go and get your master's degree, go and get your PhD. No, an adequate education based on family values. This comes back to that whole idea where the Catholic Church teaches that parents are the primary educators of their children. Because you learn how to be a human person. You learn how to be happy and good and honest with yourself within the context of a family. And through those family values and that sense of responsibility, they say these are, quote, keys to living together healthily. This is how you learn to function in a future marriage, how to function with your future children. In just a few short sentences, this couple with sage wisdom of 80 years of marriage, being 110 and 104 years old, pull right out from underneath our feet this rug that we are so comfortable on, that love is a feeling, that you have to sleep with someone before you get married, that you need to have the highest possible education in order to be equal with someone else. That's not true. They said to live together, it required rules of love. That's an action, because it requires mutual respect, as they say, and an education based on family values. That's the key, they say. That's the recipe for success in living together healthily. And it's interesting because they actually have some comments about this current coronavirus that we're facing in the world. This cute little couple from Ecuador, a Catholic couple that I add, whose parents didn't approve of them getting married. I don't know why, but they didn't. They said, it's true that at this time it's difficult because we're overwhelmed by a pandemic that affects everyone. Notice they recognize it's overwhelming. But then they go on to say this, it's also a reminder to pass on to our generations the example of being worthy to continue on. So what's the lesson been that this married couple has taken away from the coronavirus and everything we've seen? To be worthy to continue to live. Are you living a life that's worthy? Are you living a life of mutual respect, love, and education rooted in family values? Because look at the fruit. Look at the fruit that's born. A marriage that has been committed, faithful, and lasting for life. The words they have to say show us just a piece of the recipe in the fact that it is possible to marry someone for life, to choose that person day in and day out. You're listening to Trending with Timory. It's great to be with you during our happy hour, and that's one happy couple. We will post some links on social media because they are absolutely adorable. In fact, I'm going to pull up this video and I'll post over the next few minutes. They're so sweet sitting there together and interacting. I think that it's so neat to see this example of marriage in our culture. And I have to tell you, anytime I hear about a couple that's been married 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, you hear the numbers go up. Anytime, you know, you hear anything over 15 years, that's exciting anymore. They're an anomaly in our culture. And these are people we should be turning to and looking at as, what have you done? What choices have you made? How has it been difficult? Because that's what we ultimately want. We want to be happy, right? I want to talk to you about this here for a second. Research has come out with a study from Cornell University that people who plan a trip in advance are happier. The simple act of planning a trip, a vacation, whatever it might be, short or long, can actually boost your mental health. Isn't that fascinating? We all want to be happier, right? Who doesn't want to take a vacation? But also, we live in a very fast-paced life where we don't always take the time to do things, what I might say, well. Sometimes we just do things rushed and make brash decisions that overwhelm us. And then we find ourselves in a situation where we're supposed to be enjoying what's happening, whereas in reality, we end up overwhelmed, frustrated, finding we didn't make the right financial choice. And just not having a great outlook on life in general. So here's what happened. Cornell University found that those people who actually planned a trip in advance, I'll emphasize this, you plan your trip in advance, you feel better about the entire situation. You feel better about the social situation. Maybe that means who you're traveling with, where you'll be, and the type of social engagements you'll have. They also talked about how this impacted the economic circumstances, how people felt more comfortable economically with their trip. So in other words, they had planned out probably what they could and couldn't afford, what their budget was on that vacation, how much we can eat out, how we need to eat in this way, you know, making it so that the situation, the vacation itself, was feasible, realistic. You didn't feel guilty about what you were doing. You knew when you could splurge and you knew when you couldn't. So all of this ends up wrapping up into the fact that those people who plan a trip in advance actually have a general better state of mental health and a better outlook on life in general. My take on this article, it doesn't just have to do with planning a vacation or a trip, but when you actually take the time to plan out what you're going to do, you ease the tension of the social environment, you lighten the pressure of financial circumstances, and you have a better outlook mentally on life, and your mental health is in a better state. This brings me back to one of those themes that we continue to talk about here on Trending, of having a calendar that's laid out according to time. A time-marked calendar. Okay, at 9 o'clock today, I'm doing X. At 2 p.m., I'm doing Y. At 7 p.m. tonight, I can take a break because I got everything I needed to done today, and I'm not going to feel guilty about sitting on the couch and reading a book or watching a show tonight because I did what I was supposed to do. I wasn't saturated in my tasks or distracted the whole day. Or when I was distracted, I was able to just look at that time-boxed calendar and go, oh, that's right, that's what I was supposed to finish 20 minutes ago, and this is what I'm supposed to move on to now. Yes, that is how I work. But, and it's not a matter of like making yourself a slave to the calendar and the things you have to do. It's a matter of helping yourself to focus in a world that is so distracting. I'm forgetting the name of the author right now, but there was a book that came out, I believe just last year. It was called Undistractable. And it basically talked about how there are so many distractions. What can we do to overcome distraction? And the author himself talked about how one of the big things that he realized is that it was weighing, his distraction was weighing on his quality time with his child, with his spouse. It was impacting his own marriage. And so he was working on his own need to be less distracted. And one of the key things that came out in that book was the importance of having a time-blocked calendar. When we have that time-blocked calendar, even when we get distracted, we know where we're going. Also, I know it helps me in not overextending myself throughout the day. Well, let's be honest, I still probably give myself too much of a task list for the day. One of those like overachieving type A individuals who just overdoes it, right? Maybe that's you, or maybe you're the opposite and you really need that to-do list because you're just going to kind of trudge along, not really getting anything done if you don't have that guide. And so it helps me to be more realistic with myself of how long certain things are actually going to take. And it actually does impact your happiness. That's why my question today that I'm asking on Instagram, I would love to hear from you, I'm taking your questions, is what's impacting your happiness? We'll take that question up in just a little bit. I'm pulling in answers and we'll be responding here during the show. In just a little bit, I'll also be telling you whether or not we're having a baby boy or a baby girl, since we're expecting coming Advent 2020. We're so excited. I'm actually due on the feast day of Our Lady of Guadalupe. I know it might not happen that way, but it would be really cool if the baby was born on that day in particular. Okay, so another topic surrounding happiness that I don't think we discuss enough is siblings. And I was thinking about this earlier today because my mom was able to kind of going through various photos. She ended up finding a letter that I wrote back, or not a letter, but a essay, should I say, that I wrote back in high school about my siblings. I think my youngest sibling would have been about 4 at the time, about 4, 6, and 10 or so. And it was a homework assignment, and I wrote it about what my siblings' techniques were for getting out of housework. And it's been such a lark. I think I have three rather angry siblings right now for the character analysis that I basically gave on how they went about getting out of their housework day in and day out. And if you don't know, I'm the oldest of four kids, and I just love my siblings to pieces. And as we were kind of just all cracking up, my poor siblings were destroyed in this poor essay. And what's funny, I do have to say, apparently, everyone is on the same agreement that they still do the same exact things to get out of things in their adult lives. It's incredible. I mean, as we're looking at this, it's quite fascinating. But what I really think stood out to me about this entire situation, as we were laughing, reading through this essay, that I don't even remember writing, actually, is the fact that I am so blessed, and I think that there are a lot of people out there who agree. Having siblings, at least for me, has been one of the greatest joys in my life. And I have seen, though, at the same time, how siblings, or the lack of siblings, can be a great pain or a chasm in people's lives. I'll never forget, I've told the story on air before. Last year, my youngest sister was in town visiting me. We were going grocery shopping and doing various things. I think we were ordering a smoothie at one of the grocery stores. And yeah, it's one of those bougie grocery stores. They have a smoothie bar, okay? And so we're there ordering smoothies, and the girl at the counter is just like really smiling, getting really excited as she's talking to us as we're waiting for our smoothies. She goes, "Are you guys like just best friends or something?" And I said, "Oh, we're sisters." And she goes, "Really? I've always wanted to have a sister. I wonder what it would be like to have a sister. I don't have any siblings." And she went on for the next few minutes to tell us about how she was an only sibling and she always wanted a sibling. And it really stood out to me, like, siblings are such a gift in our life, yet for some reason in our culture, we've allowed for this great detachment from any familial bonds whatsoever. You see, we know from the Trinity, God has taught us that we are created to be relational. We're created in a communion of persons. And grant, there's a lot of brokenness and heartache, and for just reasons, there are separations in families, severing of bonds. There are good reasons for that. But at the same time, we've allowed for this culture of indifference and this culture of self-identity, and I can do it all on my own, and I don't need anyone, to really sever the bonds of some of those greatest relationships that we've been born into in life. So my challenge to you is this. In the face of the culture we live in the face of distance, and I can tell you my own family's gone through these changes in terms of where everyone lives in terms of distance over the years, that it really does matter when we work to build relationships with others. That it's quite incredible when we have the opportunity to get to know someone to such a degree that even 15 years later, or however long it is, you can say, yeah, those things are still similar and underlying with this person I know and love. Similar characteristics and challenges and joys and gifts and faults. So my challenge again to you is to take up that relational dimension of who you are, to not be separated from it. In a culture of loneliness, divorce, anxiety, and depression, how are you choosing to live in relationship with others? There's a reason that God gives us the gift of siblings and being raised in a family. Just like that beautiful witness of that marriage we were talking about just a little bit ago, even now, the example of where I was talking about my siblings. Within the context of family, we learn so much about ourselves and how to grow and love others as well. We'll be right back here on Trending, and you'll learn in just a little bit whether we're having a baby girl or a baby boy.
Day 14, Mother Most Admirable, pray for us. And what was the most admirable act of Our Lady? Hard to say, really. There were so many. For example, giving an unconditional yes to God's plans at the Annunciation. Or visiting her cousin Elizabeth on her own initiative, walking 100 miles to get there and then doing chores around her house for 3 months as if she had nothing better to do. or not uttering a word of complaint on the way to Bethlehem, 9 months pregnant and sitting on a donkey as she reassured St. Joseph, "Don't worry, everything will be fine." Or pushing her way through the crowd to comfort her son as he carried his cross. Or standing at the foot of the cross and telling the whole world, "He's my son and I love him." Admirable, most admirable. Mater admirabilis. Mother most admirable, pray for our church and our nation.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back. It's not too late if you want to ask your question, what's getting in the way of making you happy? I asked that question on my Instagram story. You can follow me at Timmerie, T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E, to ask your question or give your answer before we take up this topic in just a little bit, because I have to tell you, we've been having tons of responses, and I'm fascinated by what's come in. Now, before we take up that topic and before I share with you if we're having a baby boy or a baby girl come Advent 2020, we have a caller who's calling from Hercules, California. Apparently, the city of the gods is what I'm naming it. I didn't even know there's a Hercules, California. Kiara is a sophomore in high school and has a question about living out her beliefs. Welcome to Trending, Kiara.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead and ask your question.
Thank you so much. Okay, so yeah, I'm a sophomore in high school, and I'm in jazz dance. And we do a lot of, we have, a very diverse, dances. So we do, reggaeton, we do hip-hop, we do a bunch of stuff. And, But one of the problems that I guess I'm having is that a lot of the time when we're dancing, I remember hearing your how you used to make fun of, twerking and stuff like that. And I'm like, that just makes me really uncomfortable. When I am encouraged to dance like that, I'm like, I don't want to. And so I've told my teacher before, hey, I'm not comfortable. I'm Catholic. I have this and that. And yeah. But when we're put in small groups, we have to choreograph our own dance. Right now I'm having that problem where I kind of get really bummed out when I see these girls my age doing that. And, mm-hmm. I'm always, mom, where I'm like, no, that's inappropriate. We shouldn't do that. Or, I don't know. And I feel like, what should I do? Should I continue? Or, should I just let them do what they need or want to?
Kiara, this is a great question, and I have to tell you, I understand the challenges of doing something you love, dancing, and then having pressures to dance in a particular way. And I have to tell you, first and foremost, I'm really proud of you and respect that you are so able to represent your views. And when you're uncomfortable doing something, don't stop doing that. I think that comes first because it wakes other people up to, hey, maybe we shouldn't do this. But like you said, first of all, I'd be curious to hear what your teacher had to say, and we'll come back to that in a second. But with regard to working in small groups where you have to choreograph your own moves, this just shows a lack of creativity. So one idea I have is you can challenge your small group. Let's be more creative. Let's not just do the same moves other people are doing. Let's show our talent. And you might even challenge them. I'll never forget when I was dancing, one of the things that used to be really emphasized is we, of course, wanted to be performers. We wanted to be sassy, but we didn't necessarily want to be sexy in the way we danced. And so you might encourage them, let's show that we can be sassy and perform and have personality, but we don't have to dance in a particular way to get attention. They may not respond well, but you can try and communicate some of those points. But I think that one of the best things you did was, like you said, was talking to your teacher. Now, my question for you is, was your teacher very responsive when you asked her or shared with her that you didn't feel comfortable doing particular moves?
Yeah, actually, I was praying before. I was like, oh, please let her respond correctly. She was like, oh, I'm born and raised Catholic. I was like, I understand what you're talking about. If you want, you could just modify it. But I'm sorry that you had to, like, you know, feel that, I guess, not insecurity, but, like, uncomfortableness, I guess.
Yeah, uncomfortable. And don't let anyone make you think that you're being insecure by not wanting to dance a particular way. I think you have a really good understanding. It's that you're uncomfortable and you recognize it's not appropriate. And your teacher's recommendation is actually a really great recommendation. Modify. Maybe you strike a pose or do something else. You know, you're a dancer, you're creative, you're talented. And so when other people are dancing a particular way that is not appropriate, you can be creative in that situation, for example, in a class. And then if it's a problem that comes to performing, I do challenge you to talk with your teacher about ways you can be creative even when performing. And here's the truth of the matter, Kiara, is that you will stand out for how you dance and how you carry yourself. But the challenging part, Kiara, is that people will be judgmental at times because of how you say you will or won't participate in things. And so I want you to be prepared to know that sometimes people are just going to try to eat away at your happiness when dancing and just pull that joy of dancing out from under you. Don't let them do that. A change of circumstances, scenery is always doable, but don't let them, just because they feel judged or because they lack creativity in that situation, or don't have values that are being, you know, given to them by perhaps their peer group, don't be afraid to continue to stand for what you believe and do it joyfully. Great question, Kiara. Best of luck dancing. If you have any other questions about dancing, feel free to reach out here on Trending. You're listening to Trending with Timory, and it is our happy hour. And you've been waiting. I've been teasing it out. We are so excited to be expecting our child here in Advent 2020. And we have been waiting to share with you the news of whether or not we're having a boy or a girl. And we're so excited. We are having a baby girl coming Advent 2020. We're so excited and so blessed. I have to say, you know, speaking of dancing and being a mom, I'm really excited for all the cute girl stuff with clothes and headbands and cute outfits. It's just thrilling. What a gift to be able to have a baby girl first. Like, I'm totally one of those people. I truly do believe that I'm going to have boys. I pray, you know, God's will be done. I'm totally excited for whatever he blesses us with. But I am totally stoked to be having a baby girl and even to go through navigating the challenges of being a girl in this culture. In dancing, how do you have a child that dances today? How do you navigate as a 14, 16-year-old girl in a culture where you're in a dance studio and they're dancing in provocative ways that make you feel uncomfortable and you know just is not appropriate? And I think that this is the gift and excitement and challenge that so many parents have in front of them, is to teach their kids how to love in the face of a culture that is not loving its own body, its own representation of itself. You will stand out. You really will stand out when you choose to follow your faith and live your faith even in that public realm with regard to how you raise your kids, with regard to how you dance. And I know that that's going to come with new challenges. What does it mean to be a girl in this current culture? And I'm excited, and I'm sure everyone's thinking very naive about how difficult it's going to be to raise kids. And I know this is going to be a learning curve, and I'm looking forward to going on this journey with you. I know a lot of you probably have ideas for baby names and everything else that you'd like to share. So we'll have to do a segment pretty soon here about how you chose a baby name, because it's already been a debate at times. It's been quite challenging. I know some people who are like, just wait until you get into that one really good fight with your spouse over what you're going to name your baby. I thought that was really funny because it happens. It really does happen. I have friends who they like hit this stalemate where one's like, okay, we're going to name this baby and then it's your turn. And they go back and forth. I had friends who just did that and they were totally blessed because next thing you know, they had twins. So they both got to name one. They both got to name one. And my producer's commenting right now. She said she thought the same thing that I did 22 and a half years ago. She was pregnant with twin girls, and she totally thought she was going to be a boy mom. Thanks, Karen. You're ruining my hopes and dreams of having all boys. I want at least one girl. I couldn't do without a girl. All the cute girl stuff, of course, they're a gift from God. It's really funny. I do have to say, when I've been asking people, like, do you think I'm having a boy or a girl? And they're responding and commenting, and some people are like, well, what does it matter? It's a gift from God. Yeah, the baby is a gift from God. But there's a difference between a boy and a girl. They're not interchangeable. We are different fundamentally, not just in the way we look, but the way we think, even on the level of the soul. The church teaches that there's a difference about the human person on the level of the soul. And then you get to discover who that person is and their characteristics and their joys. I was sharing with you earlier on that my mom dug up this essay that I wrote back in high school, analyzing each of my three younger siblings and how each of them so eloquently would get out of doing chores and housework, and how unique each and every single one of them was. But what was so fascinating to me was reading the little analysis I put on my brother. I'm sitting here years later looking like, total boy. Total boy. The way he went about getting out of doing things. And of course, I have my own ways. They all joke that my thing was delegation, being the oldest sibling. But hey, you're an older sibling. You have to delegate. But, you know, I'm so excited. We're having a baby girl coming Advent 2020. We'll jump through baby names and all of the journey. It's been great to be with you all through this. I know some of you have been with me over the last couple of years as I've struggled with my autoimmune diseases and even being, you know, told by some people you'll never be able to have children, and then also struggling to conceive and struggling in those first months of our pregnancy. I mean, with the ups and downs, but we are so blessed, and continue to pray and ask for your prayers during our journey with our baby. I'll be right back here on Trending, and we'll be taking your questions about what's getting in the way of making you happy.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Speaking of an Advent baby growing here in my belly, let's talk about Christmas for a minute. We know that the stores seem to have Christmas decorations and music start just a little earlier each year. Don't worry, we're not skipping Halloween and All Saints Day. We want you to have a wonderful Thanksgiving as well, but we're giving away a nativity set to 200 lucky listeners. We want to make sure that you have yours and plenty of time to display it outside your home all throughout the Advent and Christmas season. So here's how you enter for the nativity set. It's valued at over $500. All you have to do is go to relevantradio.com/nativity and register before October 2nd. Say more than simply happy holidays. Say Merry Christmas to your entire neighborhood with your own beautiful hand-painted nativity set in front of your home. Together, we can impact our communities this Advent, making room for Christ inside our hearts and outside our homes. So sign up right now to win at relevantradio.com/nativity. And you might just be one of those 200 people who will win this nativity set. And maybe I just need to go register and not tell anyone, because I would love to win this nativity set. So don't tell on me. I'm going to go right now to relevantradio.com/nativity and register for my nativity set. I should tell them, like, I deserve to have this. It can be my gift for the babies. I think I should get a nativity set. It shows you we don't always get all the perks that we would like, but hopefully we will get this nativity set. And I think my producers are all nodding that they registered for the nativity set as well. So don't tell on us, because we might be the only show team who's like, I want this nativity set. So go over to relevantradio.com/trending. You only have about a week here to register. But I want to talk about what's getting in the way of making you happy. Your questions are coming in droves, and I'm feeling like we really hit a nerve here because I have so much respect for the fact that you have an idea of what's impacting your day today. So let's start with one of these first questions. On Instagram, Lissandra said, how do you avoid relying on others for your happiness? This is the key to the rest of the happiness questions that we're going to take today. Your happiness is not contingent upon another person, not contingent upon your spouse and their conversion, their behavior, their mood, or the worries you have about them. Your happiness isn't contingent upon your child, the person you're on a date with, who the president is, or how the person at the checkout stand treated you last night. If you're still worked up about the way the person at the checkout stand treated you last night, that's a key sign that your happiness is dependent upon other persons and that you're not okay unless someone else is okay. And I get this because this is easy for all of us to do. We'll never be happy until everything's just right, or until this person converts to the Catholic faith, or until this person's happy, or until this person does exactly what I want. We can't control other people. So why are we allowing them to control our happiness? You see, they're not God. They're never going to be perfect. They're never going to be that perfect person in that ideal that you are 100% looking for. God is perfect. God is good. God is true. God created you and he knows the purpose that he created the human person for. A friend of mine often comments, and whether you love him or hate him, President Trump has shown one thing that I think we can all learn. This attitude of, I really don't give a bleep what other people think about me. Okay, and I know some people, if you want to turn me off right now because I said that, but like honestly, this is something he's taught us. He just doesn't care what people think about him. And I have a really close friend who says, I wish I had that. I wish I didn't care what other people thought about me so much. Or I wish that I didn't put my happiness so much in the hands of others. You see, how do we avoid relying on others for our happiness? It requires detachment from the emotional, psychological, and physical roller coaster of another human being that is independent from you. You see, the human person has a purpose. And yes, we are relational. God created us in a family, as a part of a community, but we are not contingent upon other people. And that's really important to point out. And this is where it's so important to recognize that I think so often we have this low sense of self-esteem. And this is where we have to, I think, reclaim the territory of who we are, that I am enough. That God created me, he loves me, and he chose me. You know, you hear psychologists and therapists all the time talk about the importance of self-talk, of building yourself up, of complimenting yourself. And it's not that we're being prideful, but it's recognizing there is good in me and who I am. And I'm chosen by God, and I need to stop choosing how everyone else will make me or not make me happy. Now, also related is another question, but flipped on its back. You see, the opposite of depending on everyone else for your happiness is this question from Alfred. What about when we say, do whatever makes you happy? So this would be the exact opposite, right? Where we're depending on everyone else to make us happy and we can't be happy unless someone else is okay. And on this side, people are recognizing that when people say, well, just do whatever makes you happy, that actually doesn't make us that happy. Because sometimes we really don't know what makes us happy, and we make a lot of bad choices trying to get there. You see, it turns into this turning in on ourselves, and our identity is so focused in today's culture about being self-sufficient and independent. But God said it was not good that man should be alone. After he created Adam, in the first account of in the second account of creation in Genesis chapter 2. Part of this is because other people challenge you to grow. They challenge you to grow up, to step outside of yourself. You see, when we start to live a life in contribution toward the other person, and ultimately in union with God, that's when we're going to find the greatest level of happiness. But if we're constantly just trying to do whatever makes us happy, and however we compare ourselves or what our position is in the world to everyone else, we're constantly going to be living in a state of relativism where we try to define our own happiness, but we never actually do because we're just busy comparing ourselves to others. You see, there is such a thing as objective truth. And you and I were created with a purpose in a particular way to function. And we will only be happy if we recognize the objective truth and the truth of who we were created to be. Rather than just trying to do whatever makes you happy. That's not the answer. So another question that came up is, how can we turn toward God then when we are raised believing that happiness comes from the world? This is a great question, Rose. You sent this in on Instagram. Again, we have to come back to the fact that your happiness is not contingent upon other people. It is not contingent upon the state of the world, nor is it contingent upon how or what we have in terms of worldly goods and identity. Let go of the labels, the imaging, the status, the opinion, the materialism that we think we need to keep up with the Joneses, and ask yourself this question: who am I? What was I created for? From the Old to the New Testament, we learn that love is a fundamental part of who we are. Deuteronomy 6:5, we have the traditional Jewish Shema, which was taught by the Jewish people to their children. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. It's the feast day of St. Matthew, and in Matthew chapter 22, he recites how our Lord Jesus Christ said almost the same exact thing to us yet again in the New Covenant. He says, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind." You see, this puts human suffering and toil in perspective. You recognize the world isn't against you. You have a responsibility and a placement in the world. It's a part of the human struggle on this earth as a result of the fall. We know that Genesis chapter 3 says we're to toil and work and have challenging relationships and difficulties in childbearing, all these different things. But ultimately, we are called to love the Lord with all our heart, with all our soul, and with all our strength.
Day 14, Mother Most Admirable, pray for us. And what was the most admirable act of Our Lady? Hard to say, really. There were so many. For example, giving an unconditional yes to God's plans at the Annunciation. Or visiting her cousin Elizabeth on her own initiative, walking 100 miles to get there and then doing chores around her house for 3 months as if she had nothing better to do. Or not uttering a word of complaint on the way to Bethlehem, 9 months pregnant, and sitting on a donkey as she reassured St. Joseph, "Don't worry, everything will be fine." Or pushing her way through the crowd to comfort her son as he carried his cross. Or standing at the foot of the cross and telling the whole world, "He's my son and I love him." Admirable, most admirable. Mater admirabilis. Mother most admirable, pray for our church and our nation.